You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
What you need when what you really want inside can your life.
Running like a rare disease.
Running like a rare disease. Ghetto people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, young. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we review the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and in honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well for you today. Hope you're going to have a good day today on this Christmas day. Kwanzaa Eve. That's right, it's Kwanzaa Eve. Brothers and sisters, we appreciate you being here, and I'm glad that you're listening. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, Rachel and Pacific, any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcast. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Also, too, you can do a shortcut, babaoshi.net, babaoshi.net, with any search engine that you might want to use, Firefox, Google Chrome, whatever. All right. Okay. This is African Perspectives, and glad that we're here on this day of the program we have on African Perspectives. Aside from this program, on Thursdays, Black Liberation Movement, Mississippi on the Move with Brother Patrick Lumumba of the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club on Thursdays from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern. On Fridays, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 8 p.m. On Saturdays from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Concert with Dr. Janine. On Sunday at 7 p.m., Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, Time for an Awakening. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses at WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses, WeBuyBlack.com. It's the Kwanzaa season. I know the fourth day of Kwanzaa is cooperative economics. But, brothers, you don't have to wait till then. Go to WeBuyBlack.com and pick up whatever it is they have to offer that you need. All right? WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans. Africa for the Africans. Brother Bomani Tahimba is in Ghana. Oh, I'm sorry. He is not in Ghana. He is in Azania, South Africa. He is in Azania until the 4th of January, 2024. And when he comes back, he'll be going again March 29th to April 9th, 2024, Liberia and Morocco. July 11th to July 23rd, 2024, Ghana. November 21st to December 2nd, 2024, Kemet. December 24th to January 4th, 2025, Azania. April 1st to April 11th, 2025, Senegal and Gambia. May 24th to June 5th, Ghana. November 21st to December 1st, 2025, Brazil. As you can see, brother, he's got them out there for you. All you got to do is, go to the website, AfricaForTheAfricans.org, make a down payment, pay on it, whatever, how you want to do it, monthly, quarterly, whatever. So by the time it comes around, you're paid on it. You didn't have to drop 4G, or damn near 5G. You don't have to do it. Hopefully, when you, and also too, mind you, at these prices, they and it says all prices for tours and land investments are subject to change until you make a deposit. If you make a deposit, you lock yourself in at that. Okay, family? All right. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, please do. Go to Facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to YouTube.com/Bomani2007. Africa for the Africans.org. Habesha. HabeshaIncorporated.org. Celebrating 22 years of at the art exchange of competitive culture, Africa for the Africans. Excuse me, I'm African for the, I apologize. Habesha, celebrating 22 years of reparative agriculture at the art exchange. That's going to be February 3rd of 2024. February 3rd, 2024 at the Art Exchange. So I'm looking forward to that and promoting that. All right. Habesha. The Ledge Group, Land for the Environmental Development for Group Economics. Ledge Group. They have 12 programs, 12 projects in 6 different countries, over 172, employing over 260 members. Brothers and sisters, they deal in the areas of human necessity, of human vital. I mean, you just cannot live without food, water, clothing, and shelter. Okay? So check out the Ledge Group, Land for the Environmental Development for Group Economics. Smy Pharmacy. SMAIFARMACY. Smy Pharmacy. Check out the website. He's got a lot of new products for the beginning of the year. Yeah, man. All kind of things to help promote optimum health, new supplements. Check out smyfarmacy.com, SMAIFARMACY.com, smyfarmacy.com, or give Brother Jabril a call at 770-765-7751. That's 770-765-7751, Smy Pharmacy, or drop him an email at smyfarmacy@gmail.com. SMAIFARMACY@gmail.com. The Moses West Foundation. Brothers and sisters, you can't say enough about the AWG, the atmospheric water generator, the technology that he has developed. Can't say enough. Clean water, education, sustainability, community agriculture and rescue. You know, the economic facts of it, the foundation. So check it out, the Moses West Foundation.org. MosesWestFoundation.org. All right. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located here in Atlanta, in the West End, on Ralph David Abernathy. And give them a call at 404-444-1635. 404-444-1635. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Mama Nia, give her a call, brothers and sisters. She has a fine selection of books, postcards, greeting cards, gift certificates, T-shirts, figurines, and so much more. That's it. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. 404-346-3263. 404-346-3263. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. The Black Dot Cultural Center, the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore and Coffee Bar located in Lithonia. That is east of here, east of Atlanta. And of course, you jump on I-20, go east, exit 74. When you exit 74, make a left on the main street leading into Lithonia, about a mile. On the left will be the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore and Coffee Bar, where my good brother Kazimdi Ajamu and his wife, I mean, that place is beautiful. Once you're dealing with coffee and everything else, the books, the shoes, all those things that the brother has to offer, jump back in your ride and head back in the opposite direction, south on Main Street. Make a left again on I-20. Going east, the next exit is exit 75. Turner Hill Road, make a right, three lights, make a right. On the left will be the new Black Wall Street Market. The new Black Wall Street Market, where we're going to have Kwanzaa. That's right, starting tomorrow and all through the week. The Art Exchange is having Kwanzaa tomorrow. Oh, man, Kwanzaa is happening, family. Let's get ready. It's Kwanzaa time. Right on. ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People, Thursday night broadcast, their Thursday night broadcast, every Thursday night from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio, from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m., blogtalkradio.com/ULU. If you want to call to listen or give questions, comments, or concerns, dial 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us, lifting us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people. Homeland Village and Cultural Gift Shop, not open today because it's Monday. And also, too, because it's Christmas, maybe not open. I don't know. I know I'm doing this broadcast. So you doing a broadcast on Christmas? Yeah. It's Monday, ain't it? Or if it's Wednesday, or if it's Friday, yeah. Okay. Homeland Village and Cultural Gift Shop located in Macon, Georgia, 2910 Napier Avenue, Macon, Georgia. Open from Tuesday through Sunday, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Brother Check, Brother Abijah out. Give him a call at 478-256-1166. 478-256-1166. Homeland Village and Cultural Gift Shop in Macon, Georgia. Sun Goddess Scents. Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop located 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia. Inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225, please give my good sister Shelly Amundset a call at 404-434-7963. You got to want to get some Kwanzaa gifts and do something, you know, the right way, spending money with us and so forth? Yeah. So give my sister a call, Shelly Amundset. 404-434-7963. Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop. And Sanjay, Sister Gabby is doing the great work in Haiti, in the northeastern portion up in the hills. You know, they rely totally on us. The government can't help them because the government can't help themselves. So, brother, go to Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E, dash Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I.org. Sanjay-Haiti.org. All right. Baba Baruti and Mama Yah at Akabin Institute. They're educating our young warriors and brothers and sisters. They rely on our help as well. You can use PayPal, yahbaruti@yahoo.com. You can use Cash App, $Yah, the letter M, Baruti, B-A-R, you know, U-T-I. All right. Also, too, if you want to purchase some of the books, because you know Baba Broody is a prolific writer, go to AkabinHouse.com, AkabinHouse.com. And, of course, every program we read from the Inya Sesem that Baba Broody, he's at two volumes. And this is the first volume, and I'll read the next volume come next year, which will be very soon. December 24th, Africa is our center of gravity, our cultural and spiritual mother and father, our beating heart, no matter where we live on the face of this earth. Nana, Dr. John Henry Clark. One of his great quotes among many. Love, Dr. Clark. Bearings let individuals know their location. They point to where one has come from and if the same course is kept or altered, where one will, in all probability, end. Therefore, with respect to being African, to get one's bearing means to achieve a sense of balance in standing up straight, as well as knowing the direction from which one has come, is now facing and should go. Again, as people intent on being African, correct bearings tell us who we were, explain the mistakes that changed us into what we have become, and point us in the direction which will best move us toward a revolutionary transformation. Knowing our story is the key to locating this empowering, re-Africanizing, nation-building force within us. It means knowing our mistakes, correctives, and accomplishments, especially in relationships to others we have encountered along our journey, and knowing it from our uncontaminated, undiluted center. Knowing our truth gives us empowered bearings based on an African-centered insight, our past. Excuse me, family. Knowing our truth gives us empowered bearings based on an African-centered hindsight, our past, insight, our present, and foresight, our future. Thank you, family, for bearing with me. Affirm, I know where I am and should be. Affirm, I know where I am and where I should be. And believe me, I do. December 25th. Those with their guts cracked out of them, those with minds so minced, all their remembrance would turn to pain. Lead them along the easy road. Do not condemn. Do not pity them. Just let them go. Yaikwe Armand. We're about the business of re-Africanization and nation building, not being distracted from our work by those who will not or cannot listen because their hearts and souls belong to the desert. We, warriors of the African way, cannot get lost in the confusion of those who do not want to be African under any condition except as spies or overseers for our enemies. If we do, we will find ourselves wasting time with intellectual mercenaries and lost souls who see their primary mission as taking us off our rightful path by creating frustration after frustration after frustration. Menticide like misery loves company. Menticide like misery loves company, family. Affirm, I am about the serious business of re-Africanization and nation building. Affirm, I am about the serious business of re-Africanization. I'm about the serious business of re-Africanization and nation building. Ashe. I tell you. Mm-hmm. Let me read this one for today, for tomorrow, beginning of Kwanzaa. Our African spirituality cannot be contained or violated and used for Western European greed and materialism. Anta Jop, Gloria Edwards. It is time we made definitive statements about Kwanzaa must mean to us if it is to serve us in our fight to be African. That's what Kwanzaa is about, family, to serve us in our right, in our fight to be African. We must clearly and uncompromisingly indicate how important this celebration is to those of us who want to demonstrate the utmost respect of our ancestors and uncontaminated African traditions by following their examples. With this choice comes the responsibility of serving Africans' interests first. It requires that we stop celebrating Kwanzaa apologetically. This means we have to put an end to de-emphasizing this celebration so that others who have never felt a need to make us comfortable or who are only comfortable when their owners are comfortable will not feel that what we create is in competition with their religious celebrations or white supremacy. We need to explain our celebrations to no one in order to realize its existence. those in our community who do not want to celebrate anything African except if it comes whitewashed through European approval need not participate. Need not participate. Our stand to revitalize and re-Africanize Kwanzaa calls for us to individually and collectively set examples of humanistic perfection for each other every minute of every day. This initiative cannot be about working to turn others into some perfect model that we follow. It must be about us being the best of our ancestors and not cheap imitations of them and what they stood for. Affirm, I live in the true spirit of Kwanzaa. Ashe, affirm, I live in the true spirit of Kwanzaa. Brothers and sisters, I have as my guest today, Brother Bashir Nchawi, who lives in the true spirit of Kwanzaa. Good morning.
Habarigani, brother, what's happening?
All right. Jim Habarigani, man, the Kwanzaa season is upon us, brother.
Yes, sir, it is. It is.
Yeah.
It is. You know, and it's ironic in so many different ways. You know, here in the Northeast, you know, we expect it to be cold and you know, possibly snow, and you know, here it is today. You know, we're in the 50s. I mean, brother, this is crazy.
Yeah. Well, it's climate change, brother. There's no snow.
Yes, indeed.
There's no snow on the ground nowhere. I think there was supposed to be some flurries in the midsection of the country, Nebraska, Omaha. My friend who is in Omaha, that day, you know, it hasn't snowed yet. Everything's dry. Yeah. Everything, the temperatures are moderate or mild, you know, but that's what it is.
And it's a warning. You know, I think that, you know, we have to be conscious of so many things that are taking place right now, because essentially what it means is that we are in danger. And too often when we are in danger, we as a people, we tend to almost just ignore all of the signals.
Right.
And what's happening with the climate is just one of many signals that we as a people need to really take notice of.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes. And that's the thing, because a lot of us don't. We don't have a clue.
No, either in denial or just ignoring signs that in many instances are very, very, very clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, we have a lot of work to do, and of course, Kwanzaa is that period where we need to deal with reflection. You know, we need to deal, of course, with self-reflection in regards to looking at our own personal practices and lives and things that we're doing, but also we need to reflect as a people, because there are some things that are happening, and if, in fact, we're going to depend on the mainstream media, if we're going to depend on CBS, NBC, MSNBC, CNN, and Fox, we're in trouble.
That's right.
Because quite obviously, in regards to things that are taking place around the world, you know, it's almost like bait and switch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they go ahead and essentially, in terms of the mainstream media, they're focused on one thing because they don't want us to see what's happening somewhere else. So while many people are looking at what's taking place in Palestine, there are things that are taking place all around the African world.
Yes.
We can look at Haiti. Mm-hmm. We can look at the possible dispute between Guyana and Venezuela. Mm-hmm. We can look at what's taking place in Sudan, in Somalia. There are so many things that are happening, and our attention is being drawn in another direction.
And see, our thing as Africans, we need to focus in on those things that are affecting us the most and put our attention to that. And it's not in the Middle East. It's on the continent, you know.
But, you know, and this is something I think that is very important, that we have to be practices of African internationalism.
Mm.
Pan-African internationalism. So as an example, you know, when, you know, this war against the Palestinian people began, I mean, which has now been going on for 75 years. I mean, you know, this struggle is as old as I am.
Right.
But one of the things that happened is, you know, people are upset that our community is, many of us, a large number, the majority of African people in the United States are saying that this is wrong, that there needs to be an immediate ceasefire, that they see the hypocrisy in regards to the United States government. I mean, it's so ridiculous. If something, if a civilian hospital is bombed in Ukraine, it's a war crime. But if it happens in
Palestine,
Gaza,
yeah,
if it happens in Gaza, in Palestine, yeah, well, they'll say, you know, OY Joe will tell us that, well, Israel has the right to defend itself.
Right.
You know, now, one of the interesting things around this whole question here, and it's something that I put to, you know, some of the folks who go ahead and are asking, well, why are you concerned about this? My answer has been, if we went ahead and opposed apartheid in South Africa, why wouldn't we oppose apartheid,
yes,
in Palestine?
Ashe. Yes. Mm-hmm. So and it's ironic.
Consistent.
And it's ironic that the people in South Africa are the same ones in Palestine who were propping up and supporting apartheid. You know.
Brother. The history between Israel and South Africa, people were wondering, how did South Africa get nuclear weapons?
That's right.
You know where they got them from? They got them from South Africa.
That's right. They got them from, yeah.
They got them from Israel.
They got them from Israel. How is it that in Israel, if you look up some statistical information, the main import is diamonds. The mm-hmm. main export is diamonds. Yeah. How does that happen?
That's the question, brother. You know, you go ahead and look at this.
South Africa.
You know, Tel Aviv is one of the centers for diamond cutting.
Yes.
The two main are Antwerp and Tel Aviv.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, now they're doing some diamond cutting in New York.
In New York.
You know,
mm-hmm.
along 47th Street.
Mm-hmm.
But not on the level that it happens in Tel Aviv and Antwerp.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the question is, and again, you know, this is one of the very clear contradictions. If Africa is having all of these riches in terms of minerals, in terms of precious metals, why is the continent so poor?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, of course, obviously, the issue is colonialism and imperialism.
Yes.
But it's something that we have to go ahead as African people that we have to address,
mm-hmm.
because it's very clear that these Europeans and the European settlers who are in Israel currently are enriching themselves off of not only the labor, but the resources, mm-hmm. the material resources that exist on the African continent.
And the thing is that is ours. We should be controlling them. I don't know if you ever seen this piece, and I've always tried to direct a lot of our people to this piece on and going to YouTube to this Caucasian who talks about, he has it's almost like a TED talk, you know, and he talked about why Africa must remain poor, you know, and he's mm-hmm. very arrogant, you know, and just matter of fact, you know, what is the Caucasian's name? Man, Oshi. See, but it'll come to me. But anyway, he talks about why we must never let Africa produce anything. Extract the raw materials. We take them. We make products. We sell them back to Africa,
mm-hmm.
and we sell them to the world. We control all of these bauxite, cobalt. I mean, I'm sitting in front of two computers, a laptop that I have that I use, and of course, the main computer here, this desktop, to do this program that I dedicated to do this program, to make sure I'm able to do this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, you know. And if it weren't for Africa, this wouldn't happen. Couldn't be done. If it wasn't for Africa, for the cobalt and the bauxite and all the other mineral wealth that is in Africa. But yet, when you said it earlier, but Africa is poor. It looks poor. Its people are poor. Even when you look at, we talked about South Africa today. That's why, to me, Nelson Mandela's situation, it was a sellout. You know, because to me, if it was real, then Africans in South Africa would have been able to take advantage and been educated to take advantage of the wealth that is in South Africa. And still today, you have the deep divisions of separation and segregation, you know, in South Africa. And so that's, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to just say, you know, my position is in regards to, you know, Comrade Mandela, is that, you know, he was forward thinking and clear. But of course, his successors were not.
Right.
There was the brother, Chris Hani, who was assassinated, who was, you know, very forward thinking. And of course, mm-hmm. that was why he was assassinated.
It is.
Because he was looked at as being a possible successor to Comrade Mandela. But we have this situation where there was the generation in South Africa who were actually the freedom fighters. And then you end up having people in leadership who have no real physical connection to that armed struggle.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, their values are different than that generation that actually fought and suffered, was jailed, was killed. Then, of course, you had the issue in regards to when the young people in South Africa, when you had, for instance, the Soweto uprising, where the children determined that they were not going to learn the language of the oppressor and that they were going to go ahead and essentially boycott school and demonstrate in the streets, that particular generation did not receive the kind of education which would have led them to understanding what freedom was supposed to be. So, you know, right now, and this is interesting because before independence for South Africa, before the liberation of South Africa, where it was placed, the government was placed in the hands of the Africans, there were discussions about education. And I remember I took part in some high-level kinds of conversations. And what the South Africans who were attempting to try to form and look at what needed to happen in the educational system, they were talking about South Africa needed a non-racial education.
Hmm.
And I was like, wait a second.
No.
In the context of what has happened to African people, you can't have a non-racial education system. You have to have an anti-racist education system.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a system that goes ahead and tells the true history of South Africa, of Africa as a continent, as an African people. That needs to be the central part of the education system.
Right.
Now, it's interesting because, of course, you know, ANC was, the African National Congress, was influenced very, very heavily by Russia.
Mm.
Okay? That much of their support came from Russia. At that particular point, we could say that Russia was a communist nation. There was a communist party in South Africa that played a very important role in shaping independence there. And it was interesting because, of course, it was integrated. You know, you had people like Joe Slovo, who's one of the heroes. He's a white man. He's one of the heroes of the African liberation struggle in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was a very, very interesting in regards to some of the things that they saw as being foremost. And now, based upon those missteps that happened now, some years ago, South Africa as a nation is still paying the price.
Yes. Yes. I mean, you know, what's bothersome to me is they talk about, you know, that in South Africa, they have these people coming in from outside into South Africa, getting jobs and so forth.
Yeah.
You know, these are Africans. These are Nigerians. These are Ghanaians. Mm-hmm. They were better prepared where they came from than the than the brothers and sisters in Azania in South Africa. And so where does the but yet they don't attack the system that ill prepared them, that denied them. They attack the brothers and sisters who are coming there for these jobs.
Yeah. See, and it's very interesting because we can make the connection between what happened in terms of the migrant crisis there and what's currently taking place in the United States in terms of the migrant crisis here.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the same thing, that there are elements, you know, the racists and some of the Negroes. I mean, for instance, the mayor in New York, Eric Adams, is always talking about the migrant crisis as opposed to doing something about it. Okay? And by that I mean, to me, when these crazy Republican governors, DeSantis and Abbott, started sending people to New York, they just put people on a charter plane and sent them to Chicago just the other day. I said that the leaders of these cities needed to get with the Department of Justice because these governors in these southern states are committing a crime.
Mm-hmm.
That they're participating in human trafficking.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That they're kidnapping people.
Yes.
All right. And put the pressure on them as opposed to talking about, as in New York, you know, this Negro Eric Adams, and I know Eric, you know, it's crazy, you know.
Okay.
He's talking about now, well, you know, we have to cut services. You know, we have to go ahead. This is going to be a disaster. This migrant crisis is going to destroy New York. Instead of addressing it from the root cause and looking at what's taking place, he's going ahead and essentially blaming the migrants and causing friction in New York, where when people see that their garbage is not going to be picked up, or that there are going to be cuts in terms of the educational system, that's, you know, major central services are not going to be provided in the way that they should be, that many of these people are going to react as if, in fact, it is the fault of those people who are coming to try to essentially enjoy some kind of freedom and economic mobility that they can't enjoy wherever they're coming from.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And of course, we have to blame the United States government because, interestingly enough, a number of these migrants are now coming from countries that have been impacted by United States colonialism in so many different kinds of ways. Mm-hmm. You know, many folks are now coming from Venezuela. And as many of the listeners probably know, Venezuela, having had a revolution in Venezuela and becoming, attempting to try to become a socialist country under Comrade Hugo Chavez, that the United States has been attempting to try to destroy Venezuelan government since that time.
Since that time.
I
had the opportunity to go to Venezuela a few years ago, and with the other brothers and sisters from around the world, meeting in Venezuela to support Maduro and his regime against the West. And what they were doing, they had this one Caucasian that they were trying to put him in office by eliminating Maduro and his people, you know. But the foundation is...
Yeah, I remember. Juan Guaido. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes, Juan Guaido. But the foundation is Hugo Chavez was a bad dude.
No, he was. He was.
You know?
And that's why many people expect that the fact that he was literally assassinated in the way that the West goes ahead and assassinates people, you know, either, you know, very viscerally in regards to having them shot or doing things where their health is impacted.
Right.
You know, it's just the same thing in terms of Yasser Arafat, the head of the Palestinian Liberation Organization. Mm-hmm. You know, he was given, you know, like heavy metals, I mean, poisonous metals some kind of way in regards to his health deteriorated. And you could see it because whatever poisons that they had actually administered to him manifested physically. You could see it in regards to the color of his skin and all different kinds of things that were happening. He was assassinated.
Yeah.
And, so and I believe that Hugo Chavez was assassinated too.
I agree.
He was a very interesting brother, to say the least.
Yeah, I agree. Because, I mean, that's the thing is that, you know, because we're here in America and because we've been bamboozled and led to believe the righteousness of America for those who are ignorant to the truth and the history, you know, and so we support America. America is a land of right people who give globally and so all this bullshit. But the fact of the matter is there is no more evil America in the West than America, Europe, and everybody else. America is the military arm of European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege. America is the military arm. It is controlled in the West by Britain, particularly, and Germany, and so forth. You know, you got Australia that's controlling in the Southeast. You got, I mean, white supremacy, European, I don't call it white supremacy, I call it European Caucasian extremism because they are extreme. Racism because they are racist. They are the ones who created racism, a race. They created race, you know, and of course, privilege. They believe that this is their privilege. This is their right. You know, they have this manifest destiny, you know, and they have the right to do what they want to do. You know, so and our problem is that there are so many of us because they see that we want to believe that we're part of America, too. So it is our right to support them in that takeover.
Yeah, brother.
Yeah.
You know, and in 2024, we're going to find ourselves in a hard place. You know, people talk about the electoral process, and it's something that we need to be engaged in because our ancestors sacrificed and died so that we would have the right to vote. But, you know, the question is, you know, what is the difference between an election and a selection? And that what's going to happen now is, you know, we know people, most of us know, that Donald Trump is, you know, the personification of evil, that he's been a racist all his life. His father was a racist. His father went to Klan rallies, was probably a member of the Ku Klux Klan. They, in terms of the family, they were found federally guilty for discriminating against people of African ancestry in regards to their housing. Of course, Donald Trump went ahead and took out a full-page ad calling for the death penalty as the exonerated five were wrongly convicted. And it's quite ironic because in New York, you know, you probably heard that Brother Yusuf Salam, one of the exonerated five, has been elected to the city council.
Yes.
He's been elected to the city council in Harlem.
Yep. Outstanding.
So, you know. This is literally the chickens coming home to roost, as Brother Malcolm would say.
Yes, right.
But our contradiction is at this particular point that the Democratic Party is tone deaf. That what's happening now is, you know, our people, so many people are telling them, listen, it's time for a ceasefire. You don't go and you don't go to Israel in October and hug Netanyahu, who hates you, old white Joe. He prefers a Republican. He would prefer Trump and will do everything in his power to get Trump back in power.
Yeah.
And you're hugging him and giving him support when, in fact, he does not or would not support you. And now you're giving him essentially a green light to commit genocide.
Yes.
And one of the things that we have to always look at, if people remember historically, the Spanish Civil War. During the Spanish Civil War, Germany began to perfect its tactics that were going to be used in World War II. The Blitzkrieg, the use of the aerial, various ways in regards to going ahead and using planes to go ahead and commit genocide and destroy the enemy. The Germans used the Spanish Civil War as their experiment in regards to what was going to happen in the 1930s, 1940s through World War II.
Mm-hmm.
In Gaza right now, it's the same kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
that they are using various technologies. They're using artificial intelligence. They're using facial recognition. They're using all of these particular things. It's an experiment. But you can believe that these technologies are being perfected so that, if necessary, they could be used against us.
No doubt. No doubt, so, especially here and on the continent.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the issue for us now is, since the Democrats are tone deaf, you know, we got Hakeem Jeffries, who is the nephew of our esteemed
Leonard Jeffries.
Dr. Leonard Jeffries.
Yeah, Dr. J. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this person who's supposedly the Democratic leader refuses to call for a ceasefire in Palestine because, I mean, in August he was in Israel shaking Netanyahu's hand.
Yes.
He was there on a trip that was sponsored by AIPAC, which is one of the most racist and backwards organizations in the world.
Yes.
So we've got this contradiction now in terms of, in the electoral process, where do we go? If the Democrats are tone deaf and the Republicans are very, very clearly racist, what do we do? And the problem, I think, is that, you know, we've got Dr. Cornel West, who is running. I don't think he's a serious candidate.
No, he's not. In fact, many believe that he will do great harm to whoever the Democratic nominee is, which would more likely still be Joe Biden. You know, I wish it was somebody else, though. You know,
There's still time. It's, you know, it's not over yet.
Yeah.
And he may be so damaged in regards to his conduct since October 7th that he may have to literally step down.
Yeah.
You know, it may be too much for old white Joe.
Yeah.
You know, between that and everything that's happening with, you know, as the Republicans look to impeach him, as they go ahead and look at Hunter Biden, his son Moore. He may decide, well, listen, I don't need this. I don't need this headache.
Yeah.
You know,
I wish
let
that
me
was
step
the case.
Down.
Yeah, I wish that would be the case because we.
Yeah. Well, we will see.
Yeah. But, I mean,
we will see.
The politics of this situation, is, you know, it affects us. There's no doubt about it. But the reality is that we don't affect it. They go on and do what the hell they want to do, you know.
Yeah.
And we. You know, try our best to go along to get along, as opposed to, you know, exposing all the inconsistencies, all the lies, all the bullshit, and say it for what it is, you know.
Yeah.
And so there, those who are in it, you know, they want to make sure that we toe the line, those Democratic gatekeepers, you know. That's just like what happened with Biden going in, what you call from South Carolina, you know,
yeah, Claiborne
from mm-hmm. South Carolina, who did what he did, mm-hmm. you know. So, I mean,
well, brother, let's bring this back to Kwanzaa and the values associated.
Okay, I'm gonna tell you what we're gonna do. Tell you what we're gonna do, brother Nchawi. We're gonna take a break. We're gonna play some sure. Kwanzaa music. When we come back,
all right.
we're gonna talk about it. Okay.
Okay.
All right, all my right, brother. Man. I appreciate you.
Right here.
All right.
Brothers and sisters, you as well.
You bet. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're talking today about Kwanzaa, the importance of it, the celebration of it. I have Brother Bashir Mchawi, one of the originators, that's right, one of the originators of the Kwanzaa celebration with me. It is always an honor to have him. I'm glad that you're joining us. So, brothers and sisters, we'll be right back. You stay with us, okay? All right. All right.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
There is so much we can do. Happy, happy. that's when we get praise. To the man upstairs for another blessed day. I give hugs to my moms, my dad, and my sis. You smell that? I want to see what moms cook.
While we drink from the cup of togetherness, it's that part of the year that you don't want to miss. I give a gift from the heart so you know it's true. So recite a principle and tell me what it means to you.
Creativity.
Unite for, determine for ourselves what we choose to live or die for. We have the faith, the creative mind. It comes to us through our ancestral bloodline. Collective work, responsibility for our global economics and political destiny.
I want to say that I'm an African. I celebrate Kwanzaa because I'm an African.
Thank you.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. My guest today is Brother Bashir Mchawi, one of the first brothers who helped develop Kwanzaa and bring it into existence, and that's an honor to always have him for these many years. Brother Mchawi?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Yep. Kwanzaa. Oh, yeah. Let me add this. I was thinking of this thinking of this Caucasian named Howard Nicholas. If you ever have the, get a chance to. Go ahead.
Howard Nicholas. No, I've never seen any of his things. Or
okay,
whatever.
Well, if you have a chance to, go on to YouTube, Howard Nicholas, and listen to this cracker. You know.
I will.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just wanted to comment on the music. These are two of my favorite Kwanzaa songs. First of all, Teddy Pendergrass. There's so many people who know Brother Teddy's work but are not familiar with his Kwanzaa song.
Right.
Which is really, really important, of course.
Right.
Because, you know, people don't think that major artists will go ahead and make music like this. But, of course, you know, the proof is in the pudding, as folks would say.
And I was surprised, too, when I first heard it so many years ago. And I've been playing it out, I don't know, like the last 7-8 years, you know.
Yeah, you know, but it was obviously suppressed.
Yeah.
Because this was released, as a matter of fact, if I remember correctly, on a Christmas album that Brother Teddy did.
Okay.
But it was kind of suppressed in regards to the fact that he made this particular song, which is so beautiful.
Yes, it is.
I mean, it's just a wonderful, wonderful piece.
Yes, I agree.
Then, of course, you know, Steve Cobb and Chavanduka.
Beautiful,
you know, Kwanzaa Time and their whole album.
Yes.
In regards to Kwanzaa, I mean, it's a wonderful, wonderful piece,
and
people need to literally get their hands on it
because
one of the ways that we found that we could transmit Kwanzaa over generations is through music and song.
Yes.
So I have to give honor and praise at the East Organization in Brooklyn. We're very honored to have a brother, Baba Yusuf Iman. And what happened is that Baba Yusuf had come, had been an actor. He had come out of, just acting. He's in a number of movies and various things. He became friends. Well, he went to the Nation of Islam. And after the assassination of Brother Malcolm, he gravitated to the Black Arts Movement, became part of that, went to Newark. And I have to say that we were very fortunate in that Baba Yusuf Iman and his family moved to Brooklyn and were part of the East Organization in the early years and went through it. I mean, his family is still involved. And some of his children are still involved in regards to many of the things that we do. But Baba Yusuf created songs. So, you know, we have the seven principles song, and that we would teach the song to the children. And they, in turn, now, since we're like three and four generations deep,
right,
we teach it to their children. And then, in turn, their children teach it to their children.
Yes.
So it is through things like song and music mm-hmm. that we're able to transmit that. He did the Seven Principles song. He did a song, Praise the Red, the Black, and the Green.
Sure.
You know, he's done these particular songs, and these songs are so important because as we taught them at Ahuasasa Shule, as we taught it to our children, now it's you know, part of the literal culture, and that our children, as I said, are teaching our grandchildren, and now on to the great-grands, you know, it is something that's very important. And I think that we have to understand it. It's one of the reasons in terms of this idea of music why hip-hop is so ingrained in the youth culture, because our children literally learn and pick up things through that particular oral process.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of talking about Kwanzaa, of course, when we look at the values, we look at the value for the first day tomorrow, and that is umoja, unity. And I think for 2024, that we have to go ahead and begin to be laser focused in creating further unity.
I say, yes.
Because what has happened is, well, let's look back. One of the reasons why old white Joe and you know, these white folks go ahead and cater to Israel is because they believe that the Jewish community is unified. Now, this is not true. It's not true at all. As a matter of fact, if you look at some of the demonstrations that have been going on since October 7th calling for a ceasefire, there's an organization called Jewish Voice for Peace, which has been doing phenomenal work in regards to they shut down Grand Central Station. They shut down the Brooklyn Bridge and the Manhattan Bridge. They're doing work all around the country in regards to going ahead and saying, not in our name, that what is taking place in Palestine now has nothing to do with Jewish people as a religion or Jewish people as a group. But yet and still, because of organizations like the racist ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, mm-hmm. and as I said, AIPAC,
mm-hmm.
that Biden and the Democrats are convinced that the Jewish community is unified and speak with one voice. Now, our problem as a people is there's no such perception. You know, we've got people all over the place in regards to all of their positions. And, I mean, it's very, very, I guess you have to say, noticeable in regards to what's taking place just in Palestine. As I said, you know, you've got the progressive folks. You got people like Jamal Bowman, Ayanna Presley. You got these mm-hmm. particular folks, you know, Ilhan Omar,
yeah.
Rashida Tlaib. They're saying ceasefire.
Right.
They call for ceasefire the
Jump
week
Street.
After.
Right. From Jump
October
Street.
7th.
That's right.
And we, in turn, have been attacked even by some of the so-called Democrats and some of the Negroes who claim that they're Democrats and represent people.
Because,
mm-hmm. you know, the interesting thing in terms of this question of consensus, these people in Congress are supposed to represent the communities that elected them. But that's not what they do.
No.
The positions they take have nothing to do with the feelings of the people. Because, as an example, in terms of Hakeem Jeffries, there have been constant demonstrations in front of his office calling for him to call for a ceasefire. But instead of doing that, the Negro went ahead and ran again to Israel. He had been there in August, and he ran back to Israel again since October 7th. So one of the things that we have to do as a people is that we have to begin to go ahead, first of all, and have conversations where we can begin to go ahead and come to some kind of consensus. But we have to organize on the level where even if it is not true, there will be a perception that we are unified and can then take positions. We need, of course, as African people, our own foreign policy, which has nothing to do with the foreign policy of the United States.
That's right.
This is the position that we took when we formed back in the early 70s an organization called the African Liberation Support Committee, ALSC. It is or was an organization that was powerful in that what we did is that we were able to support the African liberation movements morally, politically, and materially, and assisted in the liberation of many of the countries on the African continent. So we were engaged in the struggle for the freedom of South Africa, Guinea-Bissau, Mozambique. You know, you go ahead and look at everything that was happening at the particular time, and it was like, you know, but we were able to create an organization that was a grassroots organization. 1 year, we had a march from the United Nations, and we went through Harlem and ended up having a rallying program in Harlem. And as we were calling for an end to apartheid, an end to colonialization on the continent of Africa, and we marched through the streets and we went through the projects, that the people saw what we were doing, and the people in the projects came out and joined us and participated in a march and were educated about the particular issues and went ahead and said, well, listen, this is something that we need to be involved in. So in those days, we were very clear that we could have advanced political positions, but that we needed to be able to go ahead and articulate these particular positions to the masses of our people. And that if we could do so properly, that our people, the masses, would join us. So at this particular point, we have to begin to organize, build organizations, coalitions, so that we can begin to once again have the perception that we are speaking with one voice. So when we would be able to do this, we would be able to impact foreign policy, not only foreign policy, but of course domestic policy in ways that at this particular point we can literally only dream about. So for 2024, I believe that what we have to really focus on is beginning to build unity in our community, locally, nationally, and internationally.
I say. And that's the underlining theme. That's why it is the first principle. It's the underlining theme of Kwanzaa. It's unity.
Yes, sir.
We need unity.
Yes, sir.
You know, we need brothers and sisters to come together and agree to agree. The compromise. Yes. We need to, I hate that. We agree to disagree. No, hell with that. We need to agree to agree, because that way things will get done. That we will understand that, okay, maybe my perspective as I'm approaching it, you know, there's some variances there that may be different. So I'm going to agree, because the bottom line is not my perspective. It is what we develop collectively. And that's the, once again, that's the thing about Kwanzaa. It is not about the individual. It is about us collectively. It's about unity. See? So when you deal with self-determination, when you deal with collective work responsibility, when you deal with cooperative economics, when you deal with purpose and creativity and faith, that's what happens. All those things, that's why the principles itself should be instilled in our everyday lives. We should be working towards unity, you know? Because And I'm not just not talking about, you know, us here. I'm talking about us everywhere.
That's right, everywhere,
because particularly on the continent, it is the continent is our salvation. It's the continent is where we need to have great influence, where we need to have brothers and sisters there who are controlling the land, the resources, the people. We need a unified Africa. We need a pan-African solution to the issues and the problems that are happening with us. We have a number of people who are on the queue. It, of course, brothers and sisters, if you want to get in, we're talking with Bashir Mchawi, one of the first organizers of the Kwanzaa celebration and the principles of Kwanzaa and many other things. You have a podcast too, right?
Well, I have an actual radio program. I'm on radio station WBAI, a part of the Pacifica Network in New York, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, and we actually stream audio at WBAI.org. It's a source for alternative information that the station has been particularly good in regards to looking at what is happening in Palestine. There have been numbers of very, very good and important programs there. I can say very clearly that it is not a African-centered station, that we have a strong presence, a strong African presence on the station, but there is a lot of alternative information even coming from white folks.
Yeah, is that public radio?
Yes, it's part of the Pacifica Network.
Okay, so the WBAI, and what's the rest of it?
Yeah, WBAI.org, WBAI.org. My program is called Education at the Crossroads. It is on generally on Thursdays at 8 p.m. I am off this coming Thursday, but we'll be back beginning January. I think that first Thursday is January 4th.
That's Thursday from 8 p.m. to what?
8 to 9, only an hour.
Okay.
Which is enough. And, you know, we'll be, you know, raising, you know, we started specifically talking about the issue of education and then broaden. Mm-hmm. I've been doing this particular program for over 25 years.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Right on. Okay. Yeah. Well,
I have to say that my actual initial foray into radio came as a member of the East Organization.
Right on.
We had a radio program on commercial radio called A View from the East, and it was heard on Sunday mornings on radio station WLIB, which at that time was the black-owned AM station. We had black-owned AM and FM stations back in the 1970s through the 1980s, into the 1990s. Now in New York, we have no black-owned radio station.
What?
In the media capital of the world.
In the city of New York?
Media market. There is no black-owned radio station in New York City.
I'm stunned by it. I'm not surprised, but I'm just stunned by it, you know. Man, I know that I'm from Milwaukee, and in fact, that's where I first had the opportunity to go on radio and even shared a program with another brother and was on once a week on radio. So, you know, and even co-host a few times a number of programs, you know, and I believe in the medium and what it can do, particularly if you are putting forth or putting out the information, because this program is about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. Our model of this program, our motto is Pan-Africanism or perish, unify,
yes,
unify or die. you know.
Yes,
but I am just surprised to hear that. But what I like, though, Brother Bashir, is to maybe see if we can you can come on. I know you do a program once a week on Thursdays, but if you can come on, you know, a few times a month for me and you to chop it up, because aside from the Kwanzaa piece, I love the other things that we are discussing, and we should discuss it more. Yes.
You know, that's the thing. It's not singular. You know, there's no singularity in regards to our conversations, that our
right.
conversations have to be very broad and encompassing. So when we talk about Kwanzaa and we talk about values, we have to base that in the practice of our lives.
I say.
You know, I think that part of the issue sometimes is that, you know, people get too focused on Kwanzaa. As a matter of fact, you know, this is interesting. You know, there have been Kwanzaa celebrations where people are Negroes, you know, for all the rest of the year, and then for 7 days, they get African.
They're throwing a dice.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, they're throwing believe me, I do. Throwing a dice chic here and put on a galay, yeah. man. And
That's right. I remember one time I went into a Kwanzaa celebration. I can't remember where it was or whatever. And I saw all these people all decked out in the finest African. And I'm like, where are these people for the rest of the year?
Yeah.
I mean, it's nice to come out during Kwanzaa, especially if you have a karamu on the last day
yes.
or whatever else it is. But wait a second. What about the other 364 days? Where are you at? What are you doing? What's happening here?
Yeah.
But I just wanted to say very quickly in regards to the history of Kwanzaa, and this is, I think, very, very important and instructive, that Dr. Maulana Karanga went ahead and synthesize Kwanzaa in 1966. When it was first practiced, it was practiced by the US organization and only a very few people. Very few people knew about it. In 1971, Dr. Karanga, who wasn't yet a PhD, went to jail. He was in jail from 1971 until 1975. It was in those years, from 1971 to 1975, when Dr. Karanga was in jail, that grassroots organizations and sisters and brothers around the country and around the world went ahead and embraced Kwanzaa and determined that they were going to take it to the people. I have to raise the name of ancestors like Baba G2 Wayuski.
Baba G2.
Founder of the East Organization.
That's right, I know G2.
Founder of Uhura Sasa Ture, people like John Watusi Branch, Brother Yusuf Wali Yaya. Yusuf Wali Yaya became the traveling Kwanzaa man after I was one of the original traveling Kwanzaa men. I had Kwanzaa set up. I had my Kanara and candles and then taking everything in the back of my car and would go all up and down the Northeast. Mm-hmm. Going ahead and having Kwanzaa celebrations and teaching people about Kwanzaa. Brother Yusuf Wali Yaya took up the mantle. I was like, Brother, I'm too busy. I have to, you know, somebody else has to come.
Right on.
So Baba Yusuf Wali Yaya became it. And he used to have a saying, when we got close to Kwanzaa, he would say, it's that time again.
That's right.
It's that time again. He's an ancestor too. We have Mama Kulumba, who did one of the first Kwanzaa coloring books. We have all of this activity that happened in those years between 1971 and 1975, which went to make Kwanzaa what it has become today. And I raise up the name of all those sisters and brothers known and unknown who are now ancestors who did that important work, which bring us to the point where we can have discussions like this about Kwanzaa.
I say. I know that.
It is collective.
Yeah.
It is not, you know, the work of one person. There are people who disagree with Dr. Karanga politically, culturally.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can understand that, but at the same time, we have to go ahead and sometimes separate the creator from the creation in regards to understanding the importance that Kwanzaa can have for us as a community.
Well, I remember when he came to Milwaukee and the unveiling of the stamp. And and that became problematic because the colors. He chose to make the colors in a different arrangement as opposed to the red, black, and green. And that was the issue.
Yeah. Yeah. Saying that it was the US flag. And they're like, you know, we don't care that it's the US flag.
Yeah.
Yeah, because this, the red, black, and green was something that was going ahead and actually secured by the UNIA under the leadership of the Honorable Marcus Garvey back in the teens, you know, 1919, you know, into the 1920s. And we have to respect and embrace that. So the fact that, you know, you and your whatever, I'm not even going to characterize it, want to go ahead and just go ahead. Many people saw it as a desecration of the flag.
Yeah. They did.
Many people in regards to the stamp said, and again, going back to the Honorable Marcus Garvey, it was the United States Postal Service that went ahead and said that Garvey was committing mail fraud and went ahead and jailed him and had him deported.
Put him in prison
So the idea that there was collaboration with the United States Postal Service was also a contradiction. But, you know, contradictions aside, brother, you know, we have to keep moving forward.
That's right. We do. We do. We have a number of people that are in the queue. Hit star twice if you want to have a conversation with my guest. My guest is Brother Bashir Mchawi, one of the original creators and promoters of the Kwanzaa celebration. I want to raise up the name of Sister Arcana from the West Coast.
Yes, sir.
You know, we, about 3 or 4 years ago, we talked about her and her contribution, because I think what we were talking about at the time were the number of people who were instrumental in promoting Kwanzaa and getting Kwanzaa to the people. She even went to the motherland to spread the word of Kwanzaa, you know.
Yes,
and
sir.
So I have to say, I've
had the opportunity. I did a Kwanzaa celebration in Ethiopia.
Right on. How was it received?
Well, it was received well. It was received well. It was received well. For some people, I have to say that there was a group of us that was traveling in Ethiopia, but we also, in terms of connecting with people who born in Ethiopia, to go ahead and educate them about Kwanzaa and do a quick celebration. And I was able to do that a few years ago in Ethiopia.
Shay.
The real Holy Land.
That's right.
You know, and I said, don't get it twisted, because, and this is, once again, when we start talking about, you know, the Jewish community and who is Jewish.
Right.
There are people in Ethiopia who have been Jewish since the time of King Solomon. Consistently.
Yeah.
These are not converts to Judaism.
Exactly.
They are the original Jewish community.
That's right. They're the Fausa Jews, along with, we're not the Ashkenazi, they're not the Khazars, they're not the late converts of Judaism who dominated and controlled it, you know, and they wanted to exercise genocide before our very eyes in this day and time against the Palestinian people. They are not the same people. We have a caller, Sister Habia. Good afternoon. You're on the line here with Brother Bashir Mchawi. Sister Habia.
Oh, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Go ahead.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, but I'm going to really, this is really an awesome program, and want to give some ashes and harambes to Brother Bashir. Really appreciating your insight, your knowledge, your call for unity and African power. So I really appreciate that, and, you know, wishing happy Kwanzaa to you all. And so I'm just appreciative that you're coming on the program and sharing your knowledge.
Sante sana.
Yeah, and I think the call for unity is extremely important. And so, I think it was wrapped around, you know, you touched on so many important entities. And so I think it was positive. And I, you know, one of the things I think we mentioned how we have to have a call for us to come together with, you know, what our proclamations are and what we demand as a people and what we are calling for. And I'm going to address that with reparations too, because
yes,
I think
yes,
that's something we can all come together. But we have, and we should, and a lot of us are. We have some of us Pan-Africanists also that say we should not have reparations because we would not know what to do with it if we got it and it's not time. But I think that we should come together and, you know, support reparations for our people. I mean, it's a debt owed. And those of us that want to do some liberation work, then we should do the liberation work with it. And I don't feel, you know, for us to say, you know, so we should, that's what I think we should push for instead of those of us being, you know, not unifying with that call.
Okay. All right, sister. Thank you, Sister Abia.
So what did you think? And I had another question. So what did you think about that, brother, about reparations, us unifying and, you know, coming together for that?
I think it's important. I think that there are, at this time, there are a number of different organizations that are organizing around the question. These organizations, as separate as they are, need to come together.
Yeah.
So that in the same way we talk about unity, we need to unify the reparations movement.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a matter of, you know, one person or one organization leading it, that this has mm-hmm. to be a collective effort. And that I think that needs to be really understood. The other thing, well, two things. You know, number one, the nature of how reparations should be delivered is, of course, a question. Whether or not this is a matter of individual reparations that families or ancestors of those who were enslaved get a particular amount of money, or do we go ahead and have instances where resources can be used to create institutions
yes.
in our community.
Yes.
I think that the issue and one of the things that we out of the East have always been concerned about is the creation of institutions.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Because when it comes to the issue of individual monies or whatever else it is, we know that our people are consumers and not producers.
Mm-hmm.
And that, in fact, if, you know, every African person got a check, that most of that money would end up in white hands within
a few months.
72 hours.
72 hours.
Within 72 hours, I say three. Within 72 hours, most of that money would end up in white hands. So what we have to do is that we have to be about creating institutions and creating sustainable resources for our community.
I say.
So, of course, the question of housing. Mm-hmm. Housing is an issue. Betterment of our communities. That's an issue. Creating sustainable economic power. You know, that's an issue. Now, one of the other issues in terms of reparations is, you know, we had these folks from ADOS.
Yeah.
And I had a brother from ADOS on, and I raised some questions with him. I said, well, would the ancestors of the Honorable Marcus Garvey be eligible for reparations? He said, no. He said, no, because, well, Marcus Garvey's from Jamaica. He would have to go, they would have to go to Jamaica for reparations. I brought it further home in regards to, let's talk about Kwame Ture, Stokely Carmichael, who went ahead and struggled mightily here for our people. Should his family be eligible for reparation? They said no. I raised Imambe Brass, whose family was born in Barbados, who struggled mightily as a Pan-Africanist. Should he and his family be eligible for reparation? And they said no. So the question here is, when we talk about reparations, we're talking about reparations for African people, because we know that the slave ships landed in different places, but it's the same people.
I say.
Unity is what you're saying. Come together in unity. And one last question about the, you know, I was appreciating your talk about what's going on with the Palestinians and Gaza. But, you know, and also I just wanted to raise the fact that there are black Palestinians also. They got African Palestinians.
Yes.
And my understanding that they treat, you know, they were catching hell from the Israeli as well as the Arab. So that's something to be addressed. But this onslaught is affecting African people too over there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's also a community.
Apartheid.
Yeah, there's also a community of Hebrew Israelites who are Africans in an area called Dimona.
Dimona, Israel, yes.
In Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And the Israelis are always attempting to try to go ahead and deport them and do various things to them. And, you know, Dimona, as a community, as I understand it, and I've never been to Israel. I mean, I'll say that I have no intentions of ever wanting to be in Israel. As I said, I've been to the Holy Land, which is Ethiopia. I don't need to go to, you know, Israel or Palestine in regards to being the Holy Land. The community in Dimona is an area that is underserved, and there's a relatively large African presence there.
Yeah.
Of people who have actually come to Israel from, in many instances,
America, from here,
know, parts of the United States.
Yeah,
yeah, from here.
Yeah. Brother Ben Amin's people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let me catch another caller here. Brother Marcus.
Yes. Brother Oshie and Brother Bashir. I'm just really listening, you know.
Okay.
I really have no interest. I'm just listening to this.
Sure. Thank you, brother. Appreciate that. All right, Brother Irv. Brother Irv. Okay. Wait a minute. Yep, go ahead, Brother Irv.
Brother, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Brother Oshie, thank you for having Brother Bashir on. He is amazing. And the words that are coming out of his mouth. I just have to say that. But the brother said that the Jewish people give the impression that they are so cohesive, that they are so together, that they are, this Netanyahu speaks for all Jews all over the world. But he gave some examples of how there are organizations that do not believe in what Netanyahu is doing, and they're protesting. The same thing happened in the fire department when I was president of Black Firefighters. Most people thought that because you saw a black person, he was automatically in the black firefighters.
That's true.
And I played on that. I said, good. And I need this and I need that. And this is just what the Jew is doing. The brother also said something about institutions. You fight a system with a system. Where does a system come from? It comes from an institution. It's not about fighting all the white people in the world. I want to kill all the white people. It's about fighting the system that the white people perpetuate. And once you get the system under control, which is done by the institution, the brother's absolutely right. And brother, believe me, I hear your call for unity. But white supremacy is on autopilot right now in black people's minds. In other words, we don't need to see a Ku Klux Klan to be scared of white folks, because we automatically... I'm just saying, we're afraid of white people. I'm not afraid of anybody. But I agree with you 110% in everything that you're saying. I hear nothing about Kwanzaa from my personal family. I don't think they know how to even spell Kwanzaa. But they know that it exists. But until you actually seek this knowledge, my brother, it can stay hidden from you for a lifetime.
Yeah.
You'll never, ever, and it's not about wearing a dashiki or wrapping your head in a head wrap. All that's well and good, but this is so much deeper than that. And I'm going to leave it right there. Thank you, my brother.
Listen, brother, before you leave, you said you were the president of Black Firefighters in what city?
In Baltimore City. I saw the Guardian Knights, the chapter of the International. Brother Oshie, knows me. He knows me and knows the work that we all were attempting to do. Yes, and we're still attempting to do it. But, right, brother, these white people, when they see black people actually coming together and doing something that they're not a part of, the hair raises up on their back. Because now we're being separatists. Why are you separating? Why are you separating from us? We're not separating from you. You're separated from us. So I'm not in the boardroom. When the money's being separated, am I in there? Oh, I could be at the party. I could be at the liquor store. I could even be at the weed place where you buy the weed now. But I can't be in the room where they chopping up it, where they chopping up Africa and taking it, what is it, Bethlehem out of Africa. They're taking Ethiopia out of Africa. It's Middle East now. These are all games that are played by these folk, but it's not a game. This is real.
Yeah.
And that's why you have what you have. Now, brother, thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Brother Irv.
Yes, right. Indeed. Thank you, Brother Irv. Thank you, Brother Irv, for sure.
Yeah. Jay, Brother Jay in New York.
Hey, what's happening, Oshi and Bashir? Hey, listen, Oshi, let me tell you this right quick.
Okay.
This brother has one of the best top three programs on WBAI. And this is the consistency of, like he said, over 25 years that this brother has been putting on programs in regards to the education of our people, specializing in education. I mean, the consistency is beyond.
Well, let me say
so
this,
what he's saying here doesn't even, tickle the bell of what he's rung in regards to educating our people and the fight that we continuously have to fight with the Board of Ed in New York City. I mean, to be honest with you, New York City is trash, man. I mean, really.
Well, I mean, Jay, when the brother said there is no radio station that we have that is controlled and owned by us that puts out this information about us, and that's problematic. I mean, I'm glad that he's on WBAI, you know, and I'm glad other stations are pumped into it, because now with the internet, you can get, you know, other stations, or you can get this station. You can get, you know, Time for an Awakening, you know, but still, you know, I tell you.
Well, all I can say is this. It proves the fact that the Jew is your daddy. That's all. So that's because at one time, WBAI and WBLS and WWRL were the hub of black information. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, you had all of the greats in regards to our liberation and what was going on in the 80s and the 90s on WLIB. You had one of the great radio hosts of all time, Gary Bird, would have on all of our scholars.
Yeah.
I mean, you had Dr. Ben on the regular. You had Dr. Clark on the regular. You had the greatest of them all, Amos Wilson. So the thing is, when Bashir talks about our issues and he mentioned the word community, the only sad thing that I have to say is there are no black communities in New York, really, honestly and sincerely. I mean, the only thing that you could even call a community in New York, to be honest with you, is probably Charles Barron's district in East New York, and that's about to probably change within the next 7 days when he leaves office. But I just wanted to say Bashir is one of those people who have been in the movement for as long as I've been in the movement. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know him directly, but I've probably shook in his hand at rallies with probably one of the greatest Pan-Africans that we've ever produce in New York and in this country who've done more for African people in this country than one could even imagine, Brother Alambe Brown, who he brung up. I mean, you know, this is the type of people that Bashir has been around and, you know, communicated and dealt with and learned from. So I just like to say the brother right there is an absolute African genius. He's the real deal.
Yeah, well, let me say this, Jay.
Well, thank you, Brother Jay. Asante Sano for all of that, all of those props. I don't know if I deserve all of that.
No, because you've been there.
Yeah. Well, listen, let me
you
get
know,
it.
Anytime, let me just say this.
Quickly, Jay.
Anytime you can bring up someone like Alambe Brown and know that you have been in meetings, sat at the table with him, had dialogue and all of that, you're the real deal.
All right. All right.
Side to side, brother. Thank you very much.
Right on. Brother Paul, this is Brother Paul is lives in the UK. Brother Paul.
Okay, I know we ain't got much time, so I'm going to be very quick. Good morning, good afternoon to you, Baba Ochi, and good afternoon to your guests. Okay, listen, we have Kwanzaa here, and Kwanzaa is international, as your guest says. But you know what? There's a few things that concern me, and I want to address it.
Okay, go ahead, please.
I want to ask your guest, I know Kwanzaa involves candles and it involves a whole heap of regalia. Now, you said that your guest was one of the founding members of Kwanzaa, but can he tell me if there's any organization which controls the regalia,
the symbols, the candles and so forth?
Actually makes them and markets them and sells them and distributes them. Is there any company in America who does that?
As far as I know, there is no company. I will say this. When we went ahead and embraced Kwanzaa, we would go ahead and produce the Kanara, the candle holders. We would go ahead and make them by hand. In regards to the production of candles, there are some African people who go ahead and produce candles. But in regards to any specific company that's going ahead and doing that work so that we have red, black, and green candles at this particular time, I'm not aware of that.
Oh, you know, I kind of suspected that, and I tell you why I suspected that. Baba Ochi always says, he says that he lives in Atlanta, and he says there's no supermarkets. That's a problem. I heard a brother this morning on WOL, a brilliant brother, brilliant mind. I forget his name. He talks about religion and the problem of Christianity and all the rest of it.
Yeah,
that's
Jeremiah Kamara. Good brother. Jeremiah Kamara.
Mind. I've listened to him before, and I know he works on the street of the people. I know he knows what he's talking about. He says he lives in Atlanta, and he says there's not one gas station which is owned by black people in America. Listen, man, the reality is this, yeah? Institutions can't be built unless there's a foundation, right? It can't. You can't build institutions out of thin air. And unless you get the foundation right, there's nothing to build upon. You can't build it out of nothing. So the reality of it is, right, if we can't come together at the basic level, and really and truly, an organization like Kwanzaa, that should be the first concept. It talks about these things, but it's not putting it into practice. These candles, no one should buy a candle from a Chinese, a Japanese, that's a Korean, right, or anybody.
That's right.
Because that doesn't make no sense. And this is what's happening. So, and you know, when it first occurred to me, a brother phoned from Jamaica to England. He talked about the celebration we were having, and he was telling everybody to put candles. The first question I asked him, I says, where are we going to buy these candles from? So he's telling us to go and buy them from all these places. I says, well, what company of ours builds these candles? Because that makes no sense. It makes no sense. So I hear what now? Carter G. Woodson talked about this 100 years ago, over 100 years. So I'm wondering in my head, what is wrong with black people, really? What is really wrong with the minds of black people? That same brother who come on WOA, he asked the same question. He talked about the brains of black people. We got to really look at where we're going. Because for Kwanzaa to be reality, not just a talking shop, not just a fashion show and all the rest of it, we have to start making things. And with that money, we reinvest it, and that's how we build institutions from the ground up. We can't build institutions with hot air and words and do all these things. And for me personally, this is the last year I'm involved in this nonsense. I'm done with it because I come from business. I grew up in a family of business, right? And reality of it is you can't manifest nothing unless you have got some form of energy. And that energy, unfortunately, we've not surpassed this monetary system. We've not created nothing or can compete against it. And it's a problem, but we'd have to do for it from the time being. So I'm suggesting that we start these companies. We start making candles, okay? That's start. Make candles and make all of regalia and then patent it so it belongs. No one else can do it. And then form groups where other people can benefit from it, like, you know, these multiple level marketing groups. And there's that other brother, Bridges, that the format he had, the distribution format is number one.
Yeah.
Right? That, because he.
Ken Bridges is a beautiful man. Ken Bridges was.
He planned that around the world.
The Mai Tai Network.
That's what we need. We need international companies, not just localized companies. We used to take that formula of building candles and send it to everywhere on the planet, and we control it. That's the way we build institutions. Thank you.
Right on, Brother Paul. Appreciate you, man. Yeah. Go ahead, my brother Bashir. Yeah. We had to wrap up now. We're up against the time. Go ahead, Brother Bashir.
Yes, sir. Well, you know, the brother has a lot to say, and part of it is real. But we've been building institutions. You look at the Universal Negro Improvement Association. They went ahead and created a banking system, starting with the kind of SUSU system, which comes out of Africa and the Caribbean, and then went on and created credit unions so that people, African people, could actually purchase property in Harlem and in central Brooklyn. I mean, these are the first ways that we went ahead and began to do that. It's interesting because these credit unions lasted up until the 1970s or so. Mm-hmm. We as a people have to be careful because, as I said before, when the sister talked about reparations, that we consume but we do not produce. And we have to get to the point where we are actually producing what we consume. At the same time, we've been building institutions for years, and we continue to do so. Not on the level that we need to, but of course, we understand at the East Organization, as an example, we saw where there were needs in the community, and as we saw these particular needs, we attempted to try to create institutions and businesses which would serve those needs. So at the East, we had a food co-op. We had a bookstore. We had weekend sets. We created a school. We had a clothing store. We had a publishing company. We had a magazine that we actually went ahead and put out called Black News, which I was the editor of for years. There, we created these particular institutions because we saw that there were needs that our people had. And using that same kind of concept, you know, we have to go ahead and see if we can create these things. And we have to interface with these people who are creating wealth or being, not necessarily creating it, but being rewarded for the kinds of things that they do. Because in the last decade, how many Black billionaires have actually been created? Whether we talk about Oprah Winfrey or Tyler Perry or Jay-Z or LeBron James or whomever.
Michael Jordan, yeah.
But we have to understand now that these folks have attracted capital, and now we have to go ahead and see how we can interface with people who are actually attracting this particular capital so that we can go ahead and do more in our community. It's being addressed on some levels, but we have to broaden the kinds of ways in which it's being addressed.
I say. Well, Brother Bashir, I appreciate your time always. I'm going to give you a buzz so we can talk about, you know, hopefully you can come on a couple times a month, if that's possible. Will be me and you can chop it up, because you have a wealth of knowledge, you know, aside from just every Kwanzaa time. I have you on the program, and believe me, you're outstanding. And I know the brothers and sisters enjoyed listening to you and understanding and listening to your perspective. So let's try to do that if we can.
Yes, sir, brother. It's 2024 in the lunar year, which begins in the beginning of February, is the year of the dragon. So we have to go ahead and act like we're dragons, brother.
That's right.
You know, we have to go ahead, you know, take that symbol, you know, that particular archetype, and yeah. that's how we have to go ahead and act as we go ahead into 2024. Because, you know, dragons don't take no mess.
That's right. Right on, dear brother. Peace to you. Thank you. Asante Sana.
Peace, brother.
All right.
Peace, Baba Oshi, and yeah. I'll be talking to you soon.
All right. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep, that means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahadier means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Peace, family.